On the next Creativity in Motion podcast, we talk with three photographers at the beginning of their careers about learning to be creative professionals.
I have to put in all of the work to get amazing photos. When I just share the average things, people don't know my full potential.
I think I'm at a drop-off point since I've graduated that it's just kind of like a leap of faith, and I've got a lot of change coming my way, and I'm really open to it.
As hard as it is, like, you have to learn to appreciate your work so much that it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. And that's only going to be possible some days. Some days it's still, you're not going to like your work. You're not going to feel adequate, but you just got to push through.
Are you ready, Freddie?
I'm ready, Freddie. Hi, my name is Mark Mosry.
And I'm Chris Hollow, and this is episode number 8 of Creativity in Motion, a podcast about creativity, where we talk with creatives of all kinds to find out why they create, and especially how they overcome creative obstacles.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about what it's like to learn how to be creative on demand 24/7. We're going to be talking with some students, creative students, about the process of learning how to be creative at the request of their instructor, at the request of clients, and how that's different from practicing photography, in this case, on your own in your free time.
And before we get started, we'd like to tell you all about our sponsor, Nosy College of Art. Nosy College opened in 1973 as a fine art school and has transformed into Tennessee's only private art college. They offer bachelor's degree programs in commercial illustration, graphic design, video and film, and photography. Starting in September 2021, they'll be offering a brand new culinary arts associate's degree. They have a beautiful 55,000 square foot facility that was built with the artistic student in mind that includes computer labs, production suites, photography and video studios, and a fully stocked equipment cage. Everything students need to get creative. To learn more about Nosy College of Art, you can visit nosy.edu, which is nossi.edu, for degree program details, faculty information, and student work.
Chris, that's a perfect segue into our show because with us today are Haley Malone, Brendan Barassa, and Savannah Lingle, three students who are in the process of studying at Nosy College of Art or have just completed studies at Nosy College of Art. Thank you guys for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Chris and I actually both have ties to Nosy. I teach at Nosy right now. And Chris, you taught there, what, a couple of years, a year?
2 years, ending in 2013.
Right.
Yeah.
And a couple of you I know from classes that we've had together. And Brendan, I just recently met you. Mm-hmm. Tell us just a little bit about yourselves. Where you're from, what you're studying. Haley, let's start with you.
Okay. I'm from North Alabama, specifically Athens. Currently, I'm studying with a bachelor's in photography. I'm specializing in commercial beauty, so beauty and product work, portraits and product work for commercial beauty companies.
Awesome. For our listeners that don't know what beauty photography is, tell us a little bit about that.
It's everything that you see as an ad in a magazine. So any like tight portrait for a skincare company, all the way out to even like jewelry and ads that have people or just the product in them.
That's interesting because people who can shoot people generally are okay at shooting product, but people who are product photographers generally aren't very good at shooting people.
I think you have to like view the person as a product. Like I know that sounds weird, but you're selling what they're using. So viewing a person as a product or as a vehicle to sell that product really changes the way that you approach the shoot.
I hadn't thought of that. That's clever.
That is clever. So if the product is makeup and you obviously have a model wearing the makeup, you're paying as much attention to the model as you are what the makeup looks like on their face or skin to make sure that it looks the way that the makeup company wants it to look.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and a lot of people think it's just all retouching. I think a lot of what beauty photography is specifically is working with makeup artists and making sure that it's portraying that product in the way that the company sees it and making sure you're pairing a model with what their brand is.
Savannah, tell us a little bit about you.
kind of in the same boat as Haley. I'm specializing in advertising and editorial work for fashion and beauty markets.
Is that the kind of thing you can do here in Nashville, or do you see yourself having to move to Atlanta or New York or LA?
Nashville's starting to get a pretty big fashion market, and I like that a lot. But I don't necessarily want to live in Nashville, so I'm hoping to move out. Miami is really big, so I've looked at that, and Houston is huge for it too. So,
Houston, really?
Yeah, they have a pretty big editorial market out there.
Huh, I had no idea.
That's
how close I am to that market.
Yeah, I told you we were going to learn from you guys also. So, Brendan, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, I'm also from North Alabama, Huntsville, and I just recently graduated a couple weeks ago from NOSI, getting my bachelor's in commercial photography. And I think my focus would be more fine art. That's just kind of what sings to my heart, but I'm open to most genres of photography.
I also happen to know that you came through the NOSI program and you're capable of doing lots of things photographically until you can find those galleries and those clients who are going to commission you
right
to do your fine art.
Yeah, I know it takes time.
So. Yeah. It does take
just
time.
Got to be open to anything. I mean, any genre of photography sings to me, but.
Well, you can do commercial work with a fine art, through a fine art lens.
Right. A lot of editorial stuff. I'm very interested in that because they're more open to fine art-ish conceptual kind of shoots now. So not just plain Jane studio shots, you know. No offense.
Not photography.
I'm deeply offended by that.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with them.
There are a lot of plain Jane studio type shots that are product shots. Yeah. You know, if you've ever shopped on Amazon and you've seen a photo of what you're about to buy, that is a plain Jane studio shot. But the world runs on that kind of e-commerce right now, and they need skilled photographers to make those boring photos, right? Because let's face it, pretty boring.
Yeah, unfortunately. But it's what pays the bills.
It does pay the bills, yeah. Which is a very real part of it. Yeah. Chris, would you consider yourself more of a product photographer or a people photographer?
I'm absolutely a people photographer. I mean, I can do some product. I have a hard time turning jobs down, but like food and some specific things I'm not really qualified for. But yeah, I'm definitely a people. I just redid my website not too long ago, and it's all people. And I've always been told and taught that you should always show the kind of work you want to get. So I'm just showing people. That's all I ever show now.
Yeah, I think I'm more of a people photographer also. I shot food for a long time, but even if you're a product photographer, you have to have people skills. And because the client is a person and you have to know how to talk to them and you have to know how to relate to them and you have to know how to make their product look good. I've done that, but I much prefer photographing people. Haley, I've seen some of your product work. It's amazing. And Savannah, I've seen some of your product work too. It's all really good. It's really good. What's your favorite thing to do? Like when you're shooting this thing, you're in the zone, you're having the best time. It's the reason that you wanted to do this.
I love beauty portraits. From the concept to planning the exact eyeshadows I'm going to use with a makeup artist, to working with a hairstylist, making sure everything's perfectly right, and then making sure that the model feels comfortable. And I'm kind of one of those people that I like to control everything. And with beauty, I'm so close. I can just tell them to make the slightest movements with their face. And it's just, it appeals to the control freak in me, which is something that you don't get to do a lot in a creative field, is feel like a control freak and like let that side of you out. So being able to do that kind of like makes me very happy.
What about you guys?
I think the satisfaction I get from pulling together all of those elements, the makeup and the wardrobe and styling and posing and lighting and everything, whenever it falls all together and it just works out perfectly the way I wanted it to. I think that's just like the best thing.
I like both. I really love shooting products. You can control everything. They're not moving. It's great. But it's awesome working with people too. And you get some real expressions in that, which is always beautiful. I tend to do a lot of high fashion work. So working with models is really fun. And I go in there and make them do the weirdest poses ever that looks awesome. And that's great. So both anything in the studio, I like anything that you can control the lighting with, you can control the hair and makeup. You can make it as perfect as you want.
It sounds like all of you do a lot of pre-production.
Oh yeah.
So is that where you feel creative? Do you feel as creative in pre-production as you do when you're actually shooting it? Or do you feel does the creativity kind of manifest itself in the actual photography?
Pre-production for products is big because you can think of everything before and set it up exactly how you want it in your head. You can get the one shot that you were looking for, but working with models, you can tell them exactly what you're wanting, but you can't really expect them to do exactly what you're wanting. So I go into my fashion shoots a little bit less prepared, ready to see what they can come out with, which is always fun. It's fun being able to tell them what to do and then seeing what they can get out of it.
I think I kind of take like a controlled creativity approach to it, if that makes sense. So like controlling the environment before I get into it so that I know that I'm going to get the shot that I need. And then after that, I can be creative with it. So we can have a little more fun. A lot of times that shot ends up being better, but I need to make sure that I deliver for either the class or the client or whatever first. And then you can kind of experiment. At least that's my mentality about it.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I definitely have like a general look I'm going for, but not every model is going to be able to really sell that look or just be flexible enough to do it, you know, because I do a lot of abstract stuff. So it's hard for some people to get into that mentality of doing weird poses and like they don't see what you're seeing in your mind. So it's also hard to portray like what you're going for because they might not get it to begin with. But when you show them, you're like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
There's times where I've had to walk over to my models and actually move their hands the way that they need to have it posed just because the way that you tell them isn't going to click in their mind sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I always go into shoots knowing exactly what I want. But it is nice to get the different photos out of it, the ones that you don't expect. Those are always very beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you have to go in with a plan, but then also enjoy the lack of structure later when you can really wing it. I mean, I've gone into shoots before where I've winged it completely. Like I didn't go in with a plan at all. I just was like, let's just see how this goes. And you know, that's kind of fun sometimes, it's a little scary. Mm-hmm. But inevitably, if you go in with a really good or firm plan, sometimes it's just not possible, or you have to modify your plan. And that's how you kind of creatively get yourself out of a jam. You know, you have to, that's a skill set, being able to kind of get yourself out of that kind of a problem.
In addition to concentrating on what you're trying to do and focusing, you have to be listening and observing what's coming back at you and being able to interpret that, because if it doesn't match up with the thing that you're trying to do, then you need to, right on the spot, come up with a way to make it go the way you want it to, or make a decision, hey, the thing that the model is giving me is actually better than what I thought I was going in for, right? So you have to be constantly thinking about that. So there's a lot more going on than meets the eye if someone were watching your shoot, right? They can't see how rapidly the gears are turning in your head, interpreting what's going on. How do you handle it, or how do you feel when, like, this great idea that you had going into the shoot, what's it like when you suddenly realize, oh, that's not what I thought it was going to be?
Personally, I feel like whenever that happens, it's happened to me a lot of times, just because my creativity can exceed what I actually have, like physically, and gear or just setup or any of that stuff. And it's kind of disappointing in the moment, but I don't throw it away. I just keep it on the back burner because that's like a good idea I could still use in the future for when it does work out in another shoot.
You can always go back to shoots. It can be frustrating sometimes, but you know, you just have to keep it going and you'll get good shots out of it. And you can redo it another time and just keep working on it.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that you taught us specifically in like the first class that I had you for, was just even if it's not something you're going to use now, make sure you have a creative bank of like go-to poses, go-to things that you can like play with, and just constantly thinking about ways that you can change what you're already doing. And like in our lighting costs, like, okay, so you like Rembrandt lighting on this? That's cool. Once you get that shot, do butterfly, see how it looks. Just change it, see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's an important part of the creative process is trying things that you weren't expecting to try. But before you can do that, though, you have to have the idea to try it, right? Because mm-hmm. So if you're so focused on the thing that you're trying to do, then you might not think to try it this other way.
I was actually just thinking about you guys. Like if you have a location you want to shoot in and you have a model you want to shoot with and you have everything planned out, well, then what you don't have planned out, you even have the direction, you've scouted it, you think you know what you want to do. And then you get to your shoot and there's a van parked outside and the sun's hitting the front windshield of the van and it's coming right in the window and just killing your shot because you didn't see that coming. Well, how could you, right? So then you go on to plan B and you modify your plan so that you kind of keep moving. And that's, we do that on the film all the time. As much planning as you can do, you still end up with having to compromise isn't the right word, but just re-steer, you know, and you can still be true to your original idea, but you have to just reorganize a little bit and move on to the next plan. And maybe it's, you come back to it later. Maybe it's the van moves and that shot opens up later, but it's always modifying. You're constantly modifying your game plan.
The last shoot we did for our film, we shot on a Friday and we shot on a Sunday. On Friday, a key member of our crew suddenly had to leave before she could do her work. She couldn't do any of her work. And we had to figure out what to do.
Like she had to leave before the day really even got started.
Yeah. And it was a communication error on the part of the producing team, which was me and her. It was just something that happened that if you'd have told me it was going to happen, I would say, you're crazy. That'll never happen. And then it happened. And we just had to figure something out. Now, fortunately, we had done a ton of work in pre-production, in research, and preparation, and in almost every other area of that production where we needed to dot I's and cross T's, we had done so. And we had a fantastic cast and crew, all of whom picked up the slack. So we were able to get past it, in fact, and have an incredibly successful shoot day or night. But it was thanks to all of that extra work that we had put in on the front end. And, you know, Chris asked you a great question about pre-production. And it strikes me now that before you started studying at NOSI, when you would practice your photography, you would just go out and shoot, right? This notion that you had to prepare, research, practice, test before you went out and shot. Like you have to shoot, you have to practice shooting before you go out and shoot, right? How was it learning that?
One of the greatest things that I've ever heard, I watched it in an interview, but the photographer shared that you have to do all of the pre-production stuff to get to the shot that you want. And you don't want to share just any average image. You want to share the best images that you have. So it's nice to know that I have to put in all of the work to get amazing photos out of it. Because when I just share the average things, people don't know my full potential. So it's a lot more work, but it's really satisfying knowing. And when you get the job done, you can take a deep breath and you know that you're going to get a good portfolio image out of it.
I can tell you from experience that if you shoot for a magazine and you supply 5 images and you're really stoked about 4 of them, they'll pick the 5th one and run it for sure.
On the cover.
So you just can't turn anything in. You're not 100% on. Because if you do, they will just, it's Murphy's Law. They will use it and they'll put your name on it and you're like, ah, that's not the one I would have chosen. Well, then you shouldn't have turned it in at all.
Yep. I think for me, learning the pre-production was kind of a difficult thing because I was a terrible student in high school. Like I did well, but I
never showed up prepared. I never did homework. I just like made it through on test and listening. So coming to NOSI, and specifically once I got into studio classes and product, and knowing that I needed to bring in props and how I was going to arrange those props and how they were going to interact with the product, that kind of stuff, like, it bit me in the butt a couple times before I really realized, because I feel like we're so overwhelmed with good photography now, with social media especially. Like, it's just thrown at you. Good photography is, great photography is. And you see Annie Leibovitz's images and you don't realize that she has a crew of putting that image together. You just see the end image. And I feel like that's kind of something that I did not realize going into it. So it was very difficult for me to learn that.
There's photo shoots that you can do that are just for taking pictures. Like, I'll go and do landscape shots and I'll go and take portraits of my friends and my family. And those won't ever show up in my portfolio, but everybody will love them and I'll give them to them and I love them. But it's a total different thing when you want to execute a shoot and do really good on it.
I think another thing too is like, not necessarily pre-production, but post-production. Like, I had no idea how much time I was going to spend in Photoshop. Like, it's an amazing image before, but you still have to go in there and clean it up because there are things, again, that are out of my control that I need to go back and fix afterwards because I can't control that in the moment, but I can in post-production.
And the camera picks up so much more than what you see with your eye. Mm-hmm. There's models that have flawless skin in person, and then you'll pull up the photos and there's a bunch of under layers that you're like, oh, I have to do so much to this now.
You were mentioning these photos that you would take, landscapes, pictures of your friends, portraits, what have you, that you wouldn't consider using for a portfolio. Do you think that those kinds of shoots and those kinds of images play a role in your continuing development, in your creative process? Like, what do those kinds of shoots offer you if they're not going to offer you a portfolio image or a professional calling card? What purpose do those kinds of shoots serve for you guys?
Yeah, the photo shoots that I do that aren't going to go into my portfolio, like fashion and beauty work, anything. I love doing all kinds of photography, anything that's landscape, any portrait sessions of my friends, food, anything like that. I love it so much, and it's a nice step back from working. The fashion stuff that I do is a lot. It's work to me. You have to put in so much to get what you want. But those photo shoots, you can take it. And then I'm very proud of the images that I get. But it's nice to have it as a hobby because I love photography a lot. But, you know, there's the work part of photography. And then there's the I love photography as an art kind of thing. I don't know if that makes sense.
I feel like it's a lot of our professors have kind of like drilled into us that we need to have personal projects on the side because it's a way for us to continue to grow as a photographer or videographer or whatever it is that we're doing at that moment, but it doesn't have the pressure of work. So you can kind of let your creativity go. You can do whatever, and if you screw up, if you mess up, if it's just truly terrible, it doesn't matter. You still went out, you did it, you got some more actuations on your shutter. You were out doing photography.
And there's shots that you get that can inspire bigger projects from those.
You all have websites, right?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Do each of you have a, on the tabs, like across or down the side, do you have a personal work tab?
I don't have a personal work yet, just because I think a lot of my personal work has still been tied into beauty. Specifically, it's just been not commercial beauty. So it's been more, like makeup artist based, so whether that be like special effects or just like more conceptual shoots that wouldn't necessarily be used for the beauty brands that I'm targeting, but it's still related to what I love to do.
I think that's okay. Brandon, you have any a personal work section of your website?
I mean, all of my like fine art portraits are my personal work, so I make them to share. I have like I have like a toy camera I take pictures with, just like of me and my friends and my family, just to be different, I guess. And I usually just post those on social media and just as content, but I'll never put them on my website, I don't think. Like, I think they're cute for social media, but I don't think that's like for like a section on my website.
I think that when clients are looking at you as a prospect to hire, that I think they're going to be looking at your social media now, whereas when we were coming up, that wasn't a thing. But they're going to look at the commercial work you've done, but also the personal work, because they're going to want to know who you are. If you had nothing but fine art work, and then you showed a gallery of your personal work with a toy camera, I think that's totally in play.
Really?
I mean, that, whenever I go look at a photographer's website, I almost always go to if there's a personal work tab, mm-hmm. I almost always go there first, because I want to know what they are interested in doing when they're not being hired to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys find that when you look at photographers' websites, if you click on their beauty images, let's say you go look at 5 beauty photographers' websites and you go look at their skincare products and you go look at their hair products and you go look at their jewelry or their men's accessories or whatever, they all look the same. From photographer to photographer, you're like, that's a high-end commercial shot. That's a high-end commercial shot. That looks beautiful, beautiful light, beautiful product, right? Do you find that?
I find they look very similar. I think specifically though with beauty, people do have a little bit of a tinge of their own personal style, even in their commercial work. I feel like that's kind of a subgenre where people have given a little bit more creativity.
If you find them to be similar, then does it make sense that the place where that photographer can really differentiate themselves is in their personal work?
100%.
So if you have that section, I agree with Chris, by the way, Brendan, that your toy camera shots,
mm-hmm.
you might find that you get some response to those mm-hmm. from your website and not just from your social media also.
Right. I mean, people always eat them up whenever I post them. I'm like, oh my God, that's so cute. Like, I love you guys. And I'm like, thanks, but you know, it's not my actual work. So I want that to speak more, I think.
Right.
Like, it's good to share your personal life and stuff, but.
But I would bet that your toy camera photography is also excellent.
I'm a little bit more playful with it, yeah.
Okay, so you're showing a little bit of who you are
right.
in that work.
Yeah.
And I think people should see that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I haven't seen your toy photography, so I don't know what yeah. it is, or I know nothing about it.
It's ridiculous.
Okay, well, yeah. that
even
might be,
more reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even more
yeah.
reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. At school, you learn lots of different techniques for the sake of learning the technique, right? Because you need to learn the technique. Sometimes because you need to realize that you don't like that technique and you would never choose to use that technique, or because you're going to be in a pinch one day and you're going to be like, oh, yes, I know how to light this because I learned how to do this, and this boring product just has to be photographed this way or it won't look right, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, beyond learning the technique for the sake of the technique, is your heart and your passion and your personality and what makes you you and how you translate that into still photos. That's what I really do believe. I agree with Chris completely. That's what people want to know about, because if they're going to hire you and spend 8 hours working with you one day, it's more than just getting you to crank out a photo or 10 that they like. They're going to be spending 8 hours with you. Like, they want to like you, they want to be, you know, vibing with you, and they want the set to be fun. And your personal work is a really good way to show, hey, this is the kind of person I am. I can produce these amazing, clean, commercial images, but I'm kind of goofy. I like silly things. I'm hung up on donuts and jelly beans. And, you know, that's just who I am, right? Whatever that is.
I would still definitely make it thematic, though. Like, I wouldn't just shotgun a bunch of images up there. If you had like your toy camera, or you just really liked shooting mice, whatever the thing is that you like to do, just let it show, let it exist, so people can know I really like shooting dust particles. But you know, whatever, it's just, that's my thing, is dust particles. Shoot it and let us see it, but make it thematic and. Put your style on it.
Mm.
It's a little counterintuitive, because you've gone to school and learned these proven professional techniques, and yet you're going to turn around and also include these goofy vacation pics or, you know, pictures of your grandparents or, you know, something like that. But that's all a part of you. And more than ever, I think that is relevant to clients.
I was just looking at my website to make sure I wasn't giving you bad advice or advice that I'm not following myself. And it's my personal work is not called personal work. It's called projects. So it's, I do have some stuff on my website. So.
And on my gallery, it's called personal projects. On my website, it's called personal projects. And there are four there. So it is, there are things that are personal, but they're also categorized according to theme. So each project has a theme. I'm sure each of you has like a process, a creative process that you fall back on or that you practice as part of your regular role of being a photographer and a creative person. And these can be things that when you get stuck, you kind of remember, oh, I'm going to try this or I'm going to do that. Or these are maybe things that you do on a daily basis or people you talk to or podcasts you listen to or, you know, websites you visit. What are your processes like?
Yeah, so one of the best things about social media is there's so much work out there that you can get some great ideas from. So I use social media a lot to get my next project in line and develop a whole concept for it. The downfall to that is sometimes you'll get on and you'll have this great idea and you'll go and shoot it and then you'll open up Instagram and somebody else has already done it, which, you know, that sucks a lot, but it's also great to have a big, you know, web outlet out there to where you can pull from everybody else's work and get some great ideas.
Yeah, I mean, getting ideas wise, I think there are two main places that I go. So it's Pinterest. We all love Pinterest, mainly because I can organize things. But then also you introduced me to Workbook, and that's one that I've gone to, especially for like commercial work, because Pinterest a lot of times is more fashion, editorial kind of stuff. And then Workbook is pretty much primarily commercial work. And being able to find inspiration for that was something that was really big for me, because I came into NOSI wanting to be a photojournalist, which I'm on a very different path now. But like finding that there is creativity in commercial work was something that was really big for me. And websites like that and seeing how people approach it was really good for me.
I get a lot of inspiration from movies too. I love watching movies. So I'm big nerd into the lighting sets and the set development of everything, and that kind of gets everything flowing. What can I do with this?
I mean, I agree with both of you. I like to surround myself in art, and social media is a very important and easy way to get any kind of art. And you can kind of build your own feed custom to what you enjoy and follow people that you find very inspiring, and that helps a lot.
I also think it's really important what he said about creating your feed and like curating it to yourself, because there's no point in looking at work that doesn't inspire you or that you don't think is good work. There, I feel like we overconsume imagery now because everybody's mom has an iPhone. I don't want to spend all day looking at her photos. I love my mom. I'm sorry if you're listening to this. I love my mom, but I don't want to like spend all day looking at my grandmother's pictures that she took of her flowers outside. They're beautiful, but I want to see something that somebody like poured their heart and soul into. And making sure that your feed is inspiring work, I think, is really important, because you can just get bogged down with just consuming imagery. And I feel like it's really bad for your brain and your creativity to just constantly consume mediocre work.
Yeah, I have a separate social media account for my professional work. And on my separate account, I follow friends that are self-taught photographers, and I keep those separate. So whenever I'm looking for some inspiration, I can look at the area that I'm going into, so I can know what to expect and what I can produce out of it.
When I'm producing a shoot with a model or talent or something, I use Pinterest, and I'll make a board, and then we'll share the board, and then we can both pin to it. And then you think you have some ideas and you pin some stuff, and then your model pins some stuff, and you're like, oh, damn, okay. Sure, let's try that, because you don't know really who they are. You may not have even met them yet. And then you can use Pinterest to kind of feel out what they're into and what they want to try. And then you kind of distill down from there. I think that's a huge resource using Pinterest for that.
Definitely. With the collaborative portion of Pinterest, I specifically, me and one makeup artist have a very like tight connection. We work together all the time. So we'll discuss concepts. I'll go through and make the boards. We both pin to it. We'll come back and we'll FaceTime. We'll get coffee. We'll do something like that. We'll narrow it down to a specific idea that we have, specific makeup looks we want to do. We'll research models. We'll put out model calls with that like specific look that we're looking for just to make sure that our shoot comes out how we want. So I think the collaborative point is really good for working with other creatives as well, not only your models.
You said something, Haley, that I thought was interesting. You said that we overconsume images. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you said that, I started thinking about that. One of the ways that I try to think of things and understand things is I try to think of the opposite. And so when you said we overconsume things, I thought, that's interesting. What is underconsuming? And then I thought, well, what does Haley mean by overconsuming? And I think that what you mean is that we look at an increasingly greater number of pictures per day, per hour, per minute, whatever, per session, right? Instagram session. We just look at them and we move on to the next thing, right? And if you think about the word consume, we're not really consuming that picture, right? Consuming is you take it in, you chew on it, you get all the nourishment out of it that you can, and then you've consumed it, right? So in a way, we actually do underconsume. It's almost like we're tasting, but we're not eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a problem, because if that's what people are doing, and if you're, at least I'll speak for myself, if I am spending a lot of time on social media tasting photos and not eating any, then I start to think that I should create photos for tasting and not for eating.
Mm-hmm.
And then I end up creating photos that have no nourishment in them to the people who are really interested in being nourished by images. So it can be a very tricky double-edged sword. You can go on there and you can taste for inspiration, but for some of those really deeper things that every artist wants to produce, they want to create work that has meaning and can be seen and looked at over and over again, and people can find new meaning in it every time they look at it or every time they see it. You have to spend some time, right? And social media, I just think, does not promote spending time with it. It actually wants to drag you as fast as it can through it.
Yeah.
It's like your body is skipping off of each image like a stone skips off of water, and the stone never gets wet. Like you see that stone and you're like, does that stone ever even get wet? It's never in the water, mm-hmm. right? So it's dangerous, I think.
I kind of like that point though, because like I work in hotels as well. So I work across the street from the Frist, and I'll have people go over for an appointment at the Frist and they'll be back in 20 minutes. How did you go through an entire art museum in 20 minutes? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you're saying about consuming art. They're not. They're just glancing at it and moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, especially art in a gallery, that's not how it's meant to be viewed. Yeah. Like, you need to sit there and take it in and understand it, because it's not surface level.
I've pulled back on sharing a lot of my work because I just want to share the best things. I want people to scroll on Instagram and stop and stare at it for longer than 2 seconds. I want them to see every detail that I put into the image. And if I don't think that somebody's going to do that, then I don't think it's worth it to put it on. Which there's a downfall of that, because to grow your social media, you have to post constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not always producing work that people are going to stop and look at for a really long time. But,
yeah.
You know, it's better to share the best images that you have than to just share whatever you have.
I feel like that's a whole other fish to fry, how social media does not support creatives, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah,
I hate using Instagram, actually. I just use it because I have to. If I had any other social media platform, because Instagram really destroys the quality of the image, and apparently they take the copyright of that image that you post.
Mm-hmm.
which bothers me a lot. But, you know, it's one of my main resources for connecting with people and showing my work. Like, I can't just post like, hey, like I updated my website. Like, I'd love to do that and have people click on it. But people are lazy. And unless you feed them like the slide up feature, which you can't do unless you're like verified, people aren't just going to go on your page and click on your website and go through, because it's not what they're there for. They're there for easy content. And I think it really destroys the quality of work, because I put a lot of time and effort into each image. And it's very disappointing to know that some people just like it and scroll. And I'm like, it's been like 2 hours editing that picture, man. Like, it's like in 3 days planning it and a day shooting it. And it's just like for a like and for a comment, and just keep scrolling and brush it off, and they're ready for the next one. And I'm like, I just want you to process, because I just put a lot of thought into that.
It's not worth it, but it's totally necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
The worst thing I've ever heard is that your camera takes really good photos. Oh, yeah. Mm. Hurts me every time.
When I was in college, there was a little blurb on a typewritten, and it was on the wall in the dark room. And it was a story of a writer and a photographer at a party. And the writer says to the photographer, "I've seen your work. You must have a really great camera." And the photographer says to the writer, "I've read your writing. You must have a really great typewriter."
Right. Exactly.
Or you need a new typewriter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a dichotomy, right? It's like you love social media for what it can do, and you hate social media because of what it doesn't do. I mean, Chris and I are in a little bit more of a position to kind of go, well, just, you know, screw social media. Like, I mean,
because we're old.
In effect, that's kind of what I've done. I just kind of go, you know, I resist that trap. And at the same time, I sort of am amazed at how easily students just put stuff up on Instagram, and how they just, oh, we'll just put that up on Instagram. I'm like, that's amazing that you can just put that up there. And then people can find it and see it like 45 seconds later, you know, It's incredible. And then I realize, oh, well, people really aren't looking at that. They're just going, oh, well, Haley posted or Brendan posted. And they're not even looking at the picture. They're just going, yeah, he updated. Like, they're more concerned that you're current than what you're putting up. I mean, I can hear that in your voices that you're disheartened by that. How can we five combat that? Like, how do you, like, it's the five of us against Facebook, right? And Instagram.
Storm the castle.
Facebook owns Instagram.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Right. They own it. And you're right. They do take your copyright and claim the right to not only use your image, but sell your image for their own profit.
Right.
And I think you all know it's a necessary evil at this moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you become okay with that?
Just let it go. Yeah. You just have to stop caring. Like, of course I don't want to, but you do what you got to do. Because I don't have clients running up to me being like, oh, I love your work on your website. Like, let's work together. I have to put myself out there.
I think it's also making sure that you have relationships with other creatives so that you can deeply discuss artwork, so that you can kind of get into the nitty gritty of how things are produced. What's the meaning behind this? Why did you do this? Having that relationship with people kind of helps counteract the disheartenment. I don't know if that's a word. How disheartened you are from just knowing that, like, this company that relies on me putting my work on their platform is literally going to take it for themselves. They can't do this without me, but they still don't respect me enough to let me retain my copyright. So I think having relationships with other artists really helps with that.
It feels like when you get the big brands and you're shooting for Vogue or you're shooting for Revlon and you have your photos up on billboards, that's when people will look at your work and they'll say, oh my gosh, she's an amazing photographer. And that sucks a lot, because I don't have that right now, but my work is still really good.
Absolutely.
Oh.
But I get it. It's just like, you want the credit that you are still good. You're still valid without having like all this in your past have worked with all these big clients and magazines and stuff. Like, that doesn't mean you're worth any less.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just that. It's I've gone to school for this. I've put in the work and the time to learn everything about lighting, so much, all of the post-production that you have to do, everything that goes into making an image and making art. It's not just an image. It's art. It's taken me a really long time to realize that, too. If it wasn't for school, if it wasn't for all of that, I probably would have been a photographer that just slaps a preset on it and calls it a day.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, not realizing the complexity of it. And, like, art is science, especially, like, photography and anything that's involving light. It's science. It's not just, I feel like people think of creatives as, like, we were stupid in high school. But, like, there is a lot of science involved in this. There's a lot of time and effort and just experimenting. And you were talking about post-production. Like, the hundreds of hours that I've spent on YouTube learning post-production and then the additional hundreds of hours that you have to practice these things. Like, you don't just become good overnight.
I'll be completely honest. Going into NOSI, I had no idea that there were such things as studio lights. But learning that, I was like, oh my gosh, look at what you can create out of this. And it's amazing. But yeah, I started photography. I started taking pictures when I was really little. And then I took a class in high school. And then I was just creating work. But that's when social media kind of just started up. And I was able to share my stuff and people loved it. There wasn't an oversaturated market on there. And then I get to NOSI and I start creating really excellent work and everybody's posting. So then it just kind of falls into everybody else's stuff. And I don't know how to get out of that. It's awful sometimes, but you know, you just have to push through it.
Honestly, I think your work is what pushes you at that point. Like, you can't get that satisfaction from outside sources.
Yeah.
As hard as it is, like, you have to learn to appreciate your work so much that it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
Yeah.
And that's only going to be possible some days. Some days it's still, you're not going to like your work. You're not going to feel adequate, but you just got to push through and figure out how to make yourself love what you do.
Well, and sometimes your client will tell you if it's good or not.
Yeah. When they pay me, their opinion matters.
Or if they hire you again.
Yeah, then you know.
Mm-hmm. What was it like for you guys when you got to school and you realized maybe you got a bad grade on something? Or you first realized, holy cow, this is a lot more work than I thought it was. Or you got a critique back, or you felt like you weren't learning like the school wanted you to learn, right? How did that realization hit you? Was it, you know, demoralizing? Did you second guess your decision? Did that just make you work harder? How'd that make you feel?
I had no idea what I was doing when I first started school, and I didn't know what I wanted to go into. I didn't know anything about it. I was doing my own thing. I was making good grades, but I was just ignoring everything that I was learning. And then I got to Mark's studio lighting class and I started learning about lighting. And that was the first class I got like a really good grade that mattered a lot to me. And when I got that, I was like, oh, I can do this. And then it just progressed from there. I started playing with lighting. I started getting really creative in everything that I was making. And it was a big difference for me. It pushed me from just doing work, from making images to producing photographs.
Brendan, how much lighting do you do in your fine artwork?
Because I had access to it, I knew I needed to utilize it because I knew my time was short with it. Because I had a really good high school photography program and I had access to lights then, but I was just toying with it. I had a really good teacher who taught me some really good setups. But I still didn't truly care. I didn't care as much, but I also just didn't know the power I had in front of me. And like the tools I was given was such a privilege. So when I got to NOSI, I was a little bit ahead of the curve And sometimes it felt like I wasn't learning anything because of that. And so that was kind of difficult. But it's, I still learned so much, like just little things that you wouldn't, sometimes it's not like in the curriculum. It's just like the things that you produce and the critiques you get or hearing other people's opinions on your work. It's just all the feedback you get that can really change your trajectory of, how hard you try. And now that I'm graduated, it's difficult facing the reality that I don't have lights anymore. And that's just the reality. And I'm going to invest in some very soon.
You should teach a class in any arts college, or at least a part of a class on lighting with all the fancy equipment and then lighting with some Home Depot lights and some foam core.
Oh, right. That's like our DIY class.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's one of the best things that COVID taught me.
So yeah. Oh my gosh, yes.
Because yeah. It was like, hey, you just moved to Nashville. Just kidding. You just lost your job. You're moving back home. You don't have lights. You only have a 50 mil.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to figure out how to shoot advanced studio lighting in your parents' dining room.
Right.
Figure it out.
I loved all of that, though. It pushed me harder than anything else. And I think that I grew the most in that. I just took a advanced commercial advertising class for product. And I was back in the studio working with lighting, but my like standard commercial advertising class happened during COVID. So we were at home using natural light, using fill cards, aluminum foil to get some lighting on where you want it. And that I made some of my favorite images during that time. Mm. And it taught me that like you can use a window as a diffuser and still get great light, and you just have to set it up the way that you want. And it's, I like it that way. And there's, you have to push yourself to use like the natural light, but still make images that are outstanding.
I think also being like cut off from that makes you thrown into the real world. So like when you're in the studio, you have all the control in the world, but now it's like, you got what you got. You got the sunlight coming in, whether it's raining or sunny day, you know, you take what you get and, in the shade, you know, find the shade, that soft light, just get a hunt for it. And it makes you appreciate, even when you're not shooting and just your day to day, like just finding light, like just where it's gorgeous. And you're just like in a moment and you're like, wow, like that's so beautiful. I wish I had my camera. Or even if I don't have my camera, it's just like, I just stare at it for like a good 30 seconds. Cause like when I drive, I love staring out the window. There's just so many beautiful scenes that most people probably wouldn't appreciate that are just passing by and people take for granted every day. And I use my like social media sometimes like that. Like I like to sometimes I like to pretend like I'm a celebrity just because it's fun and it's kind of like an act I put on, and people like that. It's just like kind of ridiculous. Like I'm just some kid from Tennessee, but they're like, you know,
it's how do weird. You do that? What do you do? Sunglasses?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just even when I'm in my pajamas, it's not like I'm dressing up. I don't have wardrobe to act like. I don't have the money to afford a wardrobe to pretend like I'm like a celebrity like that. But it's just, you know, taking selfies all the time that are ridiculous, even when you're in the most mundane situations. Like I was going to Lowe's this morning and I took like a selfie right in front of the building just to be like, we're out here, you know, like just hanging out. And it's just like, people love that. It's just weird. People always slide up on my story and they're like, you're so funny. You know, it's, because people like that situation, you could just walk into Lowe's and it'd be whatever. And people don't think about it. But, you know, if you create a moment out of it, that's outside of your control. It's just the situations you find yourself in you create like art out of it.
The next evolution is to have your friends follow you around with cameras and be like almost, paparazzi. Yeah. And then you're like, no, get away. And then your friends are following you down the road.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And you duck into Lowe's.
Right.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
That might be my next move.
Yeah. When I was in college, there was a guy who used to, his project was he would start photographing a complete stranger on the street and he would continue to get closer and closer. I wouldn't say a word. He would just get closer and circle them and just fire away until the people chased him down the road. And then he would shoot over his shoulder running backwards. And so he would have these awesome images of people screaming at him and yelling and chasing him. But that was the result was, he would have a series of people chasing him angrily down the street because awesome. He would just keep shooting until they would get upset.
And like, that's so invasive to do that. And people would never expect that. And it's just like catching people in those like actual, like raw moments is very good. I feel like it's hard to pose some things. Like especially nowadays, people are looking for like a more raw feel since like quarantine and stuff. People are like at home, you know, kind of vibe and just chilling at home because we were all cut off from one another and you're just stuck with, again, what you had at home. So you make what you can out of it.
What do you have at home that is, that feeds your creativity? What are your spaces like that reinforce your creativity or stimulate you with, you know, to have new ideas or try new things?
I have artwork hanging up on my walls everywhere. Mm-hmm. So if I walk inside, at least I'm surrounded by it. And it's the same picture of Audrey Hepburn on my wall every single day. But I walk in and I'm like, that's my icon. Anything that she does, that's, I want to take photos like what she's been photographed for.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps a lot. And then my mom, she'll hang up a lot of my pictures too. And that helps me also, even though it's my picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to know that she's like, it's not one of those, oh, look what my baby did. It's like, oh, this is a great photograph. Mm-hmm. I want everybody who walks in my door to see that she's not just your average neighbor that has a camera. She's a professional. Talented. She's doing it. Yeah.
Being from North Alabama, music is a lot of our culture. And then moving to Nashville, obviously it is as well. So just being surrounded by like music that I enjoy. I'm one of those terrible people that walks around with my AirPods in all the time. So just filling my life with music. And then another creative outlet that I really enjoy is just like makeup. I'm not very good at it, but I like just playing with it. Like it's something that there's no pressure with it. And you just get to sit and play with it. And then I have magazines everywhere, everywhere. If I see it has a beauty portrait on the front, I'm buying it. It's probably a waste of money, but I like having that in my hands. It's another way to get off of social media, but still stay inspired in a commercial way.
Well, it's nice to see magazines and see the things that are actually on the covers. And it's not, you know, you're not just scrolling through on a feed. It's like, this has been produced. This has been printed out.
Mm-hmm.
These are what you should strive for.
And it may sound a little conceited. It's like, I look at that and I know I can produce that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can do that. I can do it on a student budget.
Yeah, that pushes you so much, though.
Yeah.
That's a real skill. Yeah. What do you have, Brendan?
I definitely surround myself in art as well. I feel like if you don't surround yourself in it, you'll forget about it. If you don't use it, you'll lose it. That's one of the main things I've learned since high school is that I don't have a foot on my wall that's empty. Just because I paint sometimes, it's not good, but it's just another form of art that I can do on the side, and it's like a blank palette because when you're doing photography, you're stuck with what you have physically. And so when you paint, it's just whatever you want it to be. And even outside of that, I just think that like with the music, I think it adds another layer to your life that when I'm going to Lowe's and I'm just like looking for bird feeders for my mom's Mother's Day gift, you know, but I add music and I'm like, even though I'm like wearing like nothing fancy, I just feel like, hey, like it's me. I'm in here because I definitely don't look like someone who would go to Lowe's because I don't know anything about
hardware,
anything like that. Yeah. And I love, yeah. And when you act like that, people look at you and it's like, I might as well give you a reason to look. If I act incredible, then I feel incredible. And then people think I'm like, I don't know. I feel like people just look at you. I think it's interesting to, because sometimes it's good to blend in, but not all the time. I like to stand out.
You should definitely be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I feel like everybody is. Everyone has the potential and I like inspiring people a lot. I like to give compliments. I like to talk to people when I can, but I think me living like that inspires other people to be like, oh, I can do that. Like, yeah, anybody can be a baddie, an IG baddie, you know? It's not hard. You just have to, it's a choice. It's a mental choice to just decide to do it.
It's boring to be normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's going to be my next vanity plate on my truck. IG baddie.
Mm-hmm.
You should. You know what the IG stands for, right?
Yes. Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure you knew that.
No, I know. It's different from OG.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You can do OG baddie. Good.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
Oh. OG IG baddie.
Yeah.
That actually kind of fits us a little better. That's a bumper sticker.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Brendan, you said something that was really interesting is you offer up compliments to people when you see them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a really great way to provoke, not in a negative way, or maybe I should say stimulate a response from someone, because mm-hmm. you don't know what that response is going to be.
Right.
But you have taken a little bit of a personal risk in breaking the ice
right.
and reaching out to that person with your compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And that can frequently turn into a short conversation
mm-hmm.
that was completely unexpected, that might lead to something that you had no idea you were going to do.
Right.
Chris, you're incredibly open-minded and you don't hesitate to go explore things. You have a great story about going to buy some bones. Tell that story.
Oh, God. So we're shooting our film, our feature film, and we needed some set dressing. We need some bones, animal bones. And so mm-hmm. I get on eBay and I find this lady in a town about 2 hours west of here that has a bunch of different groupings of bones on eBay. So I contact her and I say, can I just come and see what you have? I'd like to kind of pick if you've got more. It seems like she had a lot of different bones. And so she said, yeah, absolutely. So I hit the road. And 2 hours later, I roll up to this place and I pull in the parking lot and two camels come out from behind a barn. And I get out of the car, I'm like, what the hell? There's two camels in this paddock area. And then a small herd of emu come out from the other side. So like there's camels and emus. And and there's a couple of like Serengeti style antelope, like giant mm-hmm. horns. And so I get out and I hear this lady coming and she walks over and I said, hey. And as I turn to see her, there's another caged in area with probably 20 kangaroos.
Oh, wow.
And so I ask her, what the hell is up with this? You know, what's going on here? And she hand raises baby animals for like petting zoos and things like that. Mm. She says, let me show you the bones I have. I said, okay. So we go to this little shed, probably 8 by 10 feet, stacked to the ceiling with plastic containers of bones of all kinds. Like hip bones, femurs, feet, ribs, all these different kinds of animals. And she goes to the processing plant and just gets bones. And she has just a shit ton of bones. And so I go on to pick out the bones that I want. And as I'm leaving, she goes, well, I've got a ringtail lemur. You want to see him? I was like, well, hell yes, I do. So she goes in the house and she comes out and there's a ringtail lemur on her shoulder. And he's like bouncing around, you know, it was the most bizarre day I've had in a long time. And the moral of the story is you just never know what you're going to run into. So right. talking to people is a great way to just open a door into who knows what.
Right.
It all folds into your creativity and it all folds into your life experience.
Yeah. We had a guy named Elvis Wilson on one of our episodes and he was talking about the importance of being curious. See something, be curious about it, be drawn to it, let it pique your interest. Don't brush it off. And it can be the simplest thing, right? It can be some dude walking around Lowe's with rose gold nail polish, or it could be
that would never happen.
Exotic animals, you know, in the middle of a small town in Tennessee where they have no business, you know, being. And you guys were talking about the importance of curating your feed. And I would offer up as a counterpoint, if that's all you're ever looking at, it'll be hard for new things to get in there for you to interact with them. So you have to, that's fine when you're on Instagram, if you want to streamline your Instagram sessions, but you have to make a point of finding other ways to get to be aware of new things. And for me, that's a real source of ideas and taking things from one area and mashing it up with something from another area, two things that don't normally go together, and seeing what you get. Like, to me, that's really awesome. I mean, you all mixed your Coke and your Sprite when you were young, and you all mixed your, you know, you put mustard on peanut butter, and, you know, it's like, that's what we did. We tried things, right? And that's how new things get born. And I think that's really important. And it's one of the things that I love about teaching is because there's a constant influx from students who are doing things in ways that I would not do them. Not because I feel like I know better. But it's just not my world. And it's just as valid as the way that I do it. And that to me is an endless source of potential original ideas, et cetera.
In previous episodes, we have asked people what their most recent impulse buy is. And I've been really doing badly at that. So I think we're going to change it up this week. And this time we're going to ask, what are you looking forward to? Brendan, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah. Opportunities in the future. I think I'm at a drop-off point since I've graduated that it's just kind of like a leap of faith. And I'm got a lot of change coming my way and I'm really open to it.
Excellent.
I'm looking forward to graduating.
How much longer do you have?
I graduate in December.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That's pretty soon. Savannah, what are you looking forward to?
I think that I've been adventuring into more genres of photography. So I can't wait in like 20 years to maybe be doing like something completely different, but that's really exciting to think of.
I'm actually looking forward to a new semester at school. We start a new semester next week and I'm looking forward to that. I have a slightly reduced class load, which means I can spend more time giving meaningful critiques and have more time for creative pursuits on our film and in our ventures.
Cool. Well, I am looking forward very much to a week-long road trip. We are going to take the podcast on the road, and we have a bunch of people lined up that are all different kinds of creatives, and I just can't wait to take this show on the road. I think it'll be fun to get away for a little while. The pandemic is slowing down. We can feel a little safer, and we'll have a bunch of really cool people to talk to and interview. So I'm looking forward to that.
We just can't thank you guys enough. Brendan Barraza, Haley Malone, Savannah Lingle, and you guys are awesome for being here. So really, thank you very, very much.
We do appreciate it. We're going to make sure to link all your socials. So even the personal ones, if you want to.
Creativity in Motion is produced by the fine folks at Penumbra Entertainment. If you have questions or comments, please send them to us at creativity@penumbra-ent.com. And if you like this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can follow Penumbra Entertainment on social media. On Facebook and Instagram, we are Penumbra Films. If you're interested in the show notes from this or any other episode, as well as the occasional bonus content that we publish, please make your way to our website at penumbra-ent.com. And click on the link that says Creativity in Motion Podcast.
We hope you'll join us on the next episode. Until then, please don't forget, creativity takes practice. So go out and make some stuff.